committee. And today we have a public hearing on Senate Bill 5527, Vision State Lands. I will open that public hearing, and we're going to have an overview of the...
Thank you, Senator, members of the committee. Before I start, I'd like to introduce Deb Sinnott. She's right here. She's our acting fiscal manager. Cindy Whitten, who we've met before, is on family leave. So Deb is filling in for her. I'm going to focus on the work plan that's been submitted to you. This is one that we worked on to provide you with more details on how we'll be addressing some key issues. We've done this at the request of the committee and legislative fiscal office.
Guess what? You need to identify yourself.
Thank you. You're right, and you know what? It says it right there.
I have more fun embarrassing the directors.
At least I'm not way down there.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
We give you stature, and then you're carried away. Anyway, go ahead.
See what this chair does. My name is Ann Hannes. I'm the director of the Division of State Lands.
Very good.
Thank you. I'm going to be going through a series of 8 different plans that you have before you, and it is in the yellow packet that you have before you. About a month, several weeks ago, or even maybe longer, you received this. And so the one before you has all the updated versions of the issues that we've prepared. Now, one thing I do want to note is that we did not do one for navigability, and I know that's one of that's a high concern to many people. And the reason we didn't do that is because there have been a lot of work on a bill this session, but I understand that it'll probably continue to be worked on in the Rules Committee. And depending on the passage of that bill will very much affect what we do. So not wanting to do Plan A and Plan B, it's right now we're hoping that that can move forward so that it does provide an alternative to a navigability declaration. And in fact, at the June Land Board meeting, the Land Board did vote to defer starting on the navigability study for the John Day, pending what happens in the legislature. There are eight plans that are in here on customer service, removal fill streamlining, economic stimulus, waterway leasing, filled lands, gravel extraction, the Elliott State Forest, and the South Slough Reserve. For these plans, we will be adding them to the DSL strategic plan, which we plan on bringing to the Land Board for completion and adoption in October 2003. There will be a progress report from me every 6 months to all legislators and other key constituents on how we're doing with implementing that strategic plan. We also intend that there will be progress reports to appropriate interim committees, the 2005 legislature, the Land Board, the Legislative Fiscal Office, and DAS, and it spells that out of which ones we're going to do, in some cases when, for each of those different issues. The first one I'm going to be focusing on is customer service and outreach, and we have heard a lot about customer service. One of the things I do want to say up front is that I am proud of my staff and the work that they've been doing. I feel that they have delivered high quality and responsive service. They've gotten good marks on customer surveys. Right now we only have about 1% of our permits in contested cases, and we've been conducting a lot of outreach through workshops, presentations, advisory committees. Now, that all being said, I think there's still room for improvement in ways in which we can strive for even higher levels of customer service, and I'm committed to doing that. We've already started with customer service training. We held that in April, and that was required for all DSL staff. And we are also looking at other opportunities to be explored with partner agencies. For example, I've talked with Department of Forestry, and they have trained individuals in covey management and other areas that we'd like to work with them and partner with them on to take advantage of that, and they're willing to do that. We are...
Senator Krieger. to interrupt you here, but you and I have had some real conversations about customer service, solving solution finding. Is training completed? Can you tell me a little bit about what the training was composed of?
Sure. Senator Messerly, Representative Krieger, the training took place in 2 half-day sessions. They looked at how to relate to customer or how to relate to customers, constituents, how to deliver a higher service in terms of what working with them in a variety of different formats. They did various case studies to work through how they would approach different situations. They were given homework to come back and report on, for example, how they could improve customer service, or another option was to have a staff listen in on how they dealt with somebody on the phone so they could be given tips for better communication purposes. So it was a focus on particularly delivering better customer service in government, and the consultant we hired was Michelle Kennedy, who's also provided the same training to several other state agencies, including DCBS.
So how was that received by the people that have been in the agency for some time, have had a way of doing things that was acceptable or whatever in the past, and this is maybe a new way of looking at things? Are you accepting that training?
I think overall it was received very well. What we heard from a number of individuals was that it gave them some new tools and some ways in which to better relate to others and to deal with particularly difficult cases that they have. For individuals that if they don't get it, we're going to use that as a teaching moment, and we're also going to use that as a way to provide them more guidance. If they still don't get it, then that would be cause for us to take other actions.
Okay, thank you.
And is this based on a program that the Department of Forestry has gone through with their department?
No, it's not the same one that the Department of Forestry has gone through. Department of Forestry had several different trainings, which I also went through them. Some of it was IEP, and I can't remember what it stood for. Increasing personal effectiveness, IPE, increasing personal effectiveness. Training was done by Department of Forestry staff, and those are components that I'd like to have staff do as well, because I think you always learn new things. Another kind of training that Department of Forestry had related to covey management principles, and that was first focused on upper management, and then all managers were required to do that, and I'd like to see our managers be able to have that opportunity too. And what I understand now is that the Department of Forestry had some of their people trained specifically so that they could now be trainers rather than the more costly approach of having to send people to the training put on by Covey.
I think this is really a positive move. I don't have to tell you, but a lot of it is a mindset is how do we get things going or how do we say no?
And I think, exactly, I think it's the mindset of, are you going to approach it from a problem-solving standpoint, or are you going to approach it from the more, this is the way rules are and the law is? Now, you have to consider what the rules and the law say, but there's a lot of ways that you can have flexibility and try to see what you can do to meet those requirements and still get to the goals of what a person's trying to achieve. For example, when they apply to the state for a permit.
Go ahead.
I'd mentioned before at our last public hearing that we've done customer service satisfaction surveys. We're planning to do those for all of the major programs. In addition, we've hired an intern this summer, and that intern is going to be doing a telephone survey of taking 20% of the removal fill application, so basically a random sample of 1 out of every 5 permits that we've done in the last 6 months, as well as a survey of all the environmental consultants. Because I know one comment that I heard back from you in April or May was that there was a relatively small number of surveys that were sent back to the department. So in order to get a more scientific sample and a true understanding of what is the level of customer satisfaction that we're delivering, we're going to go forward with this survey this summer.
Is there a process that each person that has contact with you or your department can give you feedback? One question. The other piece of that, though, is can give you feedback without feeling that there might be repercussions.
Now, if a permittee, they get a survey, and they can fill out that survey. I believe one of the questions on that survey is, would you like the supervisor to call you? Or you can, and then you can decide whether or not you want to put your name down or not. So there is a way to have it confidential.
And how much response do you get on that?
Do you know what we're getting right now?
Not very much.
And that's one of the reasons why we're doing the summer survey.
Yeah. Well, let me just say that that is a piece of our performance reports that we're going to be looking for the next meeting.
And I'd be happy to share with you the results of that survey that we get done this summer, and perhaps then be willing to even maybe the next time I'm down at South SLU, or I'd make a special trip to brief you on what we found out.
Or you could include it in one of the reports you got the legislature before.
That would be great.
Or I should say end.
We have given guidelines to each of the staff, which is a set of expectations for behavior and how staff should relate to customers as well as other agencies. That's also going to be included in the personnel handbook that will be is close to being finalized now. We are processing permits within the deadlines, well within meeting Senate Bill 529 deadlines. And we are working, and I'm very pleased with the work that's been done among the unclaimed property staff to assist customers and promptly process any requests for gaining money on unclaimed property back as quickly as possible. And we've had a number of successes over the last year on that. Our strategic plan, as I mentioned, will be adopted in October of 2003. We'll then take the next steps of updating the asset management plan, as well as developing performance measures related to the economy. We've been working with Jeff Tryons of the Progress Board to put together performance measures aimed at business and the economy, because that's one of the things we also heard from you a couple months ago. And the areas that we're going to be focusing on with that permitting will be in the areas of a measurement for responsive permitting. For example, are we meeting our deadlines? And that can also be a proxy for business costs, because if you don't have those deadlines met, it's more costly for business. The amount of money generated from our activities, and also exploring other types of measurements such as the rate of return.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
Just a couple of global questions. How are you going to measure performance? Are you going to measure against your performance measures, or are you going to have some more another level of short-term measurements? I mean, what I'm concerned about is how do you know if the changes that you're making are getting you where you want to go? And what happens if they don't?
I think there's several different indications of to find out if it's getting us where we want. One, we find out just how we relate to people and whether or not that's positive through those surveys. And that tells us how we're relating to individuals. We'll also be looking at the number of contested cases, because if we're not trying to work them out as much as possible from the very beginning, then if the percentage of contested cases start going up, then that's a flag to us telling us that we need to look at how we're relating to people. If we start getting complaints or hearing from you that you're getting constituent complaints, that's also a flag to us about what's happening. And then we need to look at you know, where it's coming from, because sometimes it may be a particular individual we're dealing with, or it could be a particular staff. If it tends to be localized in one area, then that tells me that that staff needs some more mentoring and counseling to work with them more closely.
So do you have systems in place that will track the amount of time it takes for permits to work through the system and that kind of thing?
Yes, we do. We have what's called the Land Administration System, LAS. And LAS tracks what tracks each permit, as well as it tells what where it is in the process and what kind of action has taken. The other thing that we've instituted as an improvement to the permitting process is now if you have a permit, you can go on to our website and look up your permit, and you can see exactly what the status of in terms of the actions that have been taken and where you're at.
Representative Krieger.
Touched on a little bit about personnel that might be having more problems with the way they relate with the customer. I found that with the department that I work, that we had some people that just weren't suited to be wearing the blue uniform. How are you going to deal with people that just don't seem to fit? They don't relate well, they don't work with people well, they don't have those skills. Sometimes we just lost a member of the state police because after 23 or 4 years, they put up with it that long before they finally said, hey, enough is enough. I think most of the time it's much more fair to that employee to say, you're not suited for this. We'd like to help you get into this or do this, or we'll use you in a different way.
Senator Meza, Representative Krieger, we've dealt with that several different ways. Some of it depends on the individual. I've had individuals where you can sit down and you can talk with them, you can provide them training, you can provide them guidance, and the light bulb goes off and they get it. Sometimes that doesn't happen, and sometimes it takes another level. And it may end up being maybe that person just isn't suitable for that type of work, and you try to find another position that's maybe more suitable. And we've had to do that, and in some cases that person has done very well in another position. And then sometimes none of that works, and you've got to go through the disciplinary process or encourage them to look for other opportunities.
And do you have in your employee recruiting and interviewing process, do you have any kind of a profiling process you go through?
In what way, profiling?
Well, I've participated in some serving on corporate boards where they literally answer, it's a well-defined program, and it really identifies whether you're good with the public or just how your personality works. And I don't mean it in a negative way. It can be very positive because, as Representative Krieger mentioned, I can't think of anything worse than someone being misassigned and spending their whole working life doing something that they're just not suited for.
What we've been trying to do with the interviewing, we've been designing questions that will get at, particularly if you have somebody that's in a sensitive position that's going to be working a lot with the public. And if you have somebody that's going to be that, we have questions that we try to ask them to get at how they would resolve problems, you know, what their approach would be. Give them maybe a what if. And how would you handle this situation? That often is a real clue. Or to ask them how they've handled something in the past, because that's also a real indicator of how well they've been able and what their skills are from a people standpoint and a diplomatic standpoint for trying to deal with something. Because there are a lot of ways you can either say yes or you can say no. We don't have any kind of test that we give someone from a psychological standpoint, but one of the things that I'm pleased at, because we've been trying to screen people out for their skills and working with people, is that the individuals that have been hired over the last year and a half have been doing very well in the way they've been working with the public, and I can see a real difference. Also on here, I want to mention that we have been doing an extensive amount of public involvement. We have a wetland consultant forum And in fact, one of the things that I promised in House Bill 2899 work group is that we would have this forum to continue to work with the wetland consultants and keep them informed about what's going on and try to work through various issues. There are advisory committees that we have, such as the removal fill advisory committee, one for trust properties we're going to be starting up again. We have one with South Slough, and then also we have periodic meetings with our lessees.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Ms. Hannes, how do you select the external folks that are going to serve on those committees? Do you have an advertisement or a mailing, or how can people make you aware of their desire to serve?
There are several different ways we have opportunities or try to find people. Senator Mesley, Representative Johnson, we may contact an organization and ask them, can they provide us with the name of an individual to represent them? We may have people that we've worked with very frequently, and they've made it known that they've got concerns about that issue, and so we may include them on it. We may, you know, we also try to see that we've got a balance on the issue so that the how it's resolved will be even stronger and can be supported more broadly when it comes out.
Thank you.
Also, in terms of outreach, we've worked extensively with people on the removal fill rule changes. We will be going out. In fact, much of August for me will be traveling around the state meeting with constituents and asking them for input on our strategic plan. We'll be starting a communicators program this August, and that is sending out information to legislators and key constituents so that they understand what's going on in our agency. As Director of Division of State Lands, I participate on the Director's Group for the Community Solutions Team. Also, connected with that, I'm involved with the Community Development Forum. And that Community Development Forum has representatives from local governments, from special districts, from ports. And that's also a way to try to work through issues with state agencies and with a variety of interested parties. We'll be looking at interagency agreements that we have with agencies in terms of how we can improve customer service. And lastly, with Senate Bill 311 that was signed by the governor, I appreciate Senator Mesley for your assistance in that. We will be working with volunteer organizations such as the Friends of South Slough and the Friends of Dibley Point to have agreements with them. Turning next to the removal fill streamlining, we'll be pursuing three different strategies, and they're not all mutually exclusive. One is to implement a statewide programmatic general permit from the Corps of Engineers. And I'm pleased that in a recent meeting that we had with the Corps of Engineers within the last week, the Corps has said that they'll be issuing public notice seeking comments on the SPGP. We're working through the final issues with U.S. Fish and Wildlife and NOAA Fisheries, and we're aiming for approval by the end of the year or early next year. So that one is very much on track. In terms of assuming Section 404, the Clean Water Act, that would allow us to streamline an even greater percentage of our permits. I did send a letter to Senator Ferrioli earlier this session. Because of concerns that were raised by the farm community, we want to work with them more closely to try to resolve those issues. My hope is that we can provide you with a more complete package for your review and consideration at the next session before we would submit that to EPA.
And my sense is that you and your department have spent a considerable amount of time on this last 2 years. Do you anticipate putting a lot of effort into that in the coming batting?
We'll be putting a lot of effort into it. One, because streamlining permits is a real high priority of the governor, and it's also a high priority for the agency. I think it's a benefit to permittees so they don't have to.
Excuse me, I'm referring to the 404 assumption.
Or the 404 assumption. Yes, we will be. because, one, I've made a commitment to try to work out the issues with the farm community, ones that they've raised. And I do think, especially in talking with other states and hearing from a number of stakeholders, it's something they're still very much interested in.
And we can talk about this later. I don't necessarily need to take up too many time doing this, but we've had meetings up in the conference room on the Senate side that maybe is it wise to push hard on the 404 aspect of it. The general permits and the SPGPs is very important to build some credibility and some confidence. And I know, and there's other issues that you're going to be committed time-wise on in this coming biennium, such as 836 task force and things. I'm concerned that you don't get spread too thin, or that we're not able to give you enough resources to do all of the tasks, and maybe we're going to have to, or we and you are going to have to prioritize what we expected to get accomplished in the next 2 years.
And I can understand that. We have the SPGP, I think, is going to be a way to show what streamlining can offer. And it also gives us a way to demonstrate what can be delivered. And I think that will help in looking at the benefits of 404 assumption. The third avenue that we can follow with streamlining is looking at expanding the SPGP. So there are a couple different routes we can go. We're going to continue efforts to improve removal fill permitting process and increasing the understanding and efficiency of the program. For example, we had a major rule revision earlier this year that made it easier for small projects less than 0.2 acres, gave them more expedited permitting and more flexibility for mitigation, further defined what irrigation ditches that's no longer under our jurisdiction, and more clarity. I mentioned online access, and we are also pursuing, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later, the industrial lands project, especially with pilot that we have now engaged in Lebanon and in Douglas County. We've also increased coordination with OWEB and SWCDs. I have also, it's in your packet there, a letter that I sent out to those engaged in the House Bill 2899 process on things that I've committed to doing. I mentioned some of that already. It also includes doing some rulemaking to define methods to mitigate for reasonably expected adverse impacts and for temporary impacts. We'll be trying to increase online access. We've got a procedures manual that's almost done. By having things like compliance manual that we finish and a procedures manual, I think that makes it easier for people and provides more transparency to say how we're going through the permitting process and exactly what we're doing. And then we've also tried to commit to, and then we also said we're committing to resolving the in-lieu payments issue with the Corps, and we've had a meeting with them on that already.
And do applicants for permits get copies of the fact sheet?
What's that?
Do applicants for permits get copies of this fact sheet with their application form?
Which fact sheet is that? The.
I think when you do.
No, I don't believe they do. It's on our website.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
If I could just point out that in this section and in several of the other ones, the agency is proposing some budget notes, and it would be helpful to get the subcommittee's reaction and input on those budget notes so that when we come back, we will have next week for their work session, we'll have run those by the co-chairs to either get their approval or not. And I don't know if you want to. Representative Morgan, this is in the removal bill section on page 4. And we could either do them as we go through each section when they appear or wait till the end.
I think it'd be good to do it as we go through. Would you like to do that? Present what you suggested?
Yes. If you look under what we have under removal fill of streamlined permitting on page 4, the budget note that Sue mentioned is there believe it's essentially similar to the budget note that we've had in the past session that says that we would continue to pursue methods to streamline and that we would report regularly.
And, committee, I would suggest that we put definite time for reporting so that it's very clear to everyone when that in this first budget notice.
Senator, if you look on pages 2 and 3,
okay,
that shows the times when we were planning to report to legislative committee, the land board, and it ties it in with the schedules.
Okay. So wouldn't it be prudent to put that in some form in the budget note?
You could link carrying out the budget note to what we've committed to carrying out in the work plan.
Sure.
And if you want, we could take a crack at just revising some of that language to reflect
your
presentation.
The only thing I would point out, Mr. Chair, is that right now it's a little difficult to know when the interim committees might be meeting. And
right.
So we'd have to maybe put by a certain period of time rather than a specific month.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
In your deliberations, I think you have to have a timeline associated to the issues like streamlining the processes for administering permits. And I'm wondering if part of the discussion here is to tie the agency's budget to success in these areas somehow.
Yes, that's a piece of it I think we will try to accomplish, and we certainly need the input from the department. And that's why at some point in this presentation, while we see a cash flow per work task.
I don't have that with me, but what makes that it's difficult to do because we do have various people working on different things. We could tell you generally how much is in different program areas, but things such as with customer service, it's much more difficult to say. From a cash flow standpoint,
at least my intention is not to micromanage or create havoc for you in your cash flow, but my intention is to see outputs, I guess, and to make sure we have outputs. Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, while I don't completely disagree with the direction that you and Representative Morgan are heading, I want to make sure that if we link budget to any of the budget notes or any agency actions, that those be actions that are completely within the ability of the agency to control. Any agency with a regulatory function isn't going to please all of the people all of the time, and I just would hate to see anything punitive and near to the agency when it's completely beyond their control.
Representative Morgan.
And I absolutely concur with what Representative Johnson is saying and would go back to the discussion that we had when we did the budget for the Columbia River Gorge Commission, that we need a realistic work plan with realistic checking points. I mean, I would hate to see a work plan come out of the department that wouldn't be attainable. And, you know, I think with that in mind, that having some kind of financial stake in it in terms of the department having an incentive to stay on the work plan and show the results that they initially anticipated that they should get, that it should be actually a mechanical kind of a process. If you've got a work plan that you say you can do and you step through it and the funding is dispersed in a way that is agreed to according to the work plan, it should just all roll out.
Representative Morgan, sometimes it does. Sometimes it's difficult because there are other factors outside of our control in what we're dealing with.
I would assume in that kind of a situation that a discussion with whatever committee you're coming for would take care of it.
My hope is that by having frequent communication with you and letting you know what the progress is, what we're able to achieve, what we're maybe not able to achieve or had some setbacks on, or ones where we've had successes, that we're going to be communicating with you on a frequent basis so that you'll know where we are and what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've got to come back to you in 2 years, so if I haven't been able to deliver and accomplish on this, there's another opportunity there, too.
Well, I don't think that I'm going to change my position. I think that there needs to be a vested interest in the agency conforming to the work plan, and I don't mean to say, too, that if there are conditions beyond your control that boil up, that you should most definitely come to the committees and, you know, explain the situation and have the issues dealt with and the funding issues dealt with, too. But I do think that there needs to be an incentive to perform the work plan.
Are there areas that you are thinking that we don't have, that we're not vested in here? Because I haven't put these forward unless I feel that we're committed to doing them.
Well, and that's fine. I mean, I'm not saying that you aren't committed. I would fully expect you to put forward a work plan that you were committed and prepared to do.
Yeah, I hope you don't take it as a negative situation. I mean, this is just a credibility building, I think, between the legislative body and I don't know where to put this. But the perception is there that, yes, we're together and we're moving forward. And I hope this isn't meant as a threat. It's not where I'm coming from. I don't think this committee is. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I have one other concern in this, and I have less experience in this process than some on this panel, but I am unfamiliar with any other agencies that have been financially tied to a performance work plan. And I don't know how much of this is a departure from how the legislature ordinarily deals with agency deliverables.
I'm not sure how to respond or if we can respond to that at this time.
Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, I can provide a little bit of information just based on my personal experience with these with budgets in the past, and I personally haven't experienced a wholesale plan to tie an agency's budget to certain activities. Certainly things like special purpose appropriations can be put in the emergency board, and you can have agencies come back and report on meeting on whether they've met certain conditions in order to have that special purpose appropriation allocated. The case of DSL, is my understanding that last legislative session there was some limitation withheld for the second year of the operations of the South SLU program, and they came back and reported on some changes that they had made in that program and received the limitation for the second year. So things, you know, on a smaller scale have been done. I'm not aware of any larger scale plans, however.
The next part that I want to talk about in terms of economic stimulus are the pilot shovel-ready industrial site projects that we have going on with Lebanon and Sutherland in Douglas County. There are two areas down there, and we want to apply those lessons. We've provided everything that we've committed to the county so far for moving forward with these pilot projects. As I understand, Douglas County has hired a consultant. There's going to be a progress meeting on that for mid-July. Lebanon is a lot farther along. And I'm hopeful that this is going to provide us with some lessons learned that we can then use for other industrial sites and be able to free up sites for much-needed economic development.
And are we, is the focus here on developing new sites or are preparing to shovel readiness old sites, old mill sites or old industrial sites?
Senator, I'd like to ask John Lilly to join me because he's been working on this project most closely.
Senator Mosley, members of the committee, I'm John Lilly, Assistant Director for the Division of State Lands, and I've drawn the short chair. to your question, sir.
Nothing we can do about
that's
that.
That's right. I've been this way all my life. The sites that have been chosen for the two pilot projects, the Lebanon site is an existing industrially zoned parcel within the Lebanon urban growth boundary. It, to my knowledge, hasn't been used, had any prior use other than farm use before it was brought into the UGB. The sites in Sutherland and near Winston in Douglas County are undeveloped sites. They were not former mill sites or anything of that nature. So they're, I guess you'd call them raw sites. And we are working closely with the economic community and community development group and the community solutions team on this project ready exercise and looking at, I think we're reviewing now somewhere in the neighborhood of 60 to 70 sites that have been nominated in the different regions of the state for consideration as certified sites. There's a kind of a push to certify 25 sites early or later this year. My understanding is most of those sites are what I call raw sites. Some have various some development on them. I'm not familiar enough with them individually to know if they're brownfield sites or old mill sites.
I would just suggest that maybe we all should step back and rethink that a little bit because probably in many cases we're going to see old sites be revamped and they have all the permits, and I'm thinking of the American Bridge as one example, which is an old mill site. And even though it was an old mill site, they still had a lot of issues. But most of them have a lot of infrastructure to them already, and so it's going to be the easier picking, I would think. I don't want to go one way or the other, either way, but I think we need to include all of them. Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chair, thank you. This is not necessarily apropos anything other than the fact that I saw a first cut at that list, and the one thing that did stand out on it in the comments section was just rows of wetland, and this wasn't the last 25. This was the full universe that everybody had put forward. It startled me how many had wetland issues. And beyond brownfield or old mill sites, that may be a reoccurring theme.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I've looked at the same list. Our staff is looking at each of those sites, and in some cases the presence of wetlands is being borne out. In other cases, it's shown that the wetlands are not as extensive as originally thought. But part of that is to try to identify the issues that may be of concern for development in order to know just what we're dealing with on the front end. I think that we're better prepared to deal with them if we know where they are. And so part of this process is filtering through that, seeing how many and how extensive they are, what quality they are, how easily they can be mitigated, if at all, should development take place there.
Mr. Chair, just to offer my apologies to the director and her staff that I have to leave momentarily.
Representative Morgan.
Part of the problem around wetlands is the requirement for mitigation and the often I know, especially with the Sutherland site, the need for mitigation because of the administrative rules is really onerous in terms of what's available around there to act as mitigation sites. And I'm wondering if in part of your process streamlining, are you going to be taking a look at things like the administrative rules that the department operates under for wetlands mitigation and taking a look at whether there are ways to change those rules so that the process isn't so onerous?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, we're constantly looking at that. And in terms of the Sutherland site, there are extensive wetlands on that property, and that's part of the reason we wanted to go ahead and partner on this one with the county and others, is to see just how we could design mitigation for that site and make it and get it in the realm of economic feasibility. There are really a lot of options for folks developing on properties that have wetlands. They aren't all, let's say, stuck in one box, so to speak. It is possible to develop properties. There is no state law prohibiting the filling of wetlands in the state with as long as a permit is obtained and a mitigation is obtained as well. The current rules allow for folks to look at both on-site and off-site mitigation. They can buy credits from a mitigation bank. In the final instance, if none of that's available, they can make a payment to the state's revolving fund account, and the state would do the mitigation in lieu of the applicant. We've had success on all of those things.
But my understanding is, and please correct me because I am, you know, like an inch thick of knowledge here, but that the mitigation issues as they apply to the Sutherland site would put an extreme financial burden on the feasibility of the site to develop, and that things like the 2-to-1 part of the administrative rules that require a 2-to-1 mitigation on the wetlands that are lost, and given the configuration of land down there and the cost of land and what is available, the cost of mitigation is way out of proportion to the value of the land itself.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, we're not sure that that's going to be the case yet. I mean, the part of this effort is to be able to identify reasonable mitigation that meets the economic feasibility test as well. The ratios that are imposed vary depending upon the method that one chooses to actually create, restore, or enhance a wetland. If they choose one of the options as a 1-to-1 option, then there may be the economic feasibility may be greater than if they choose the 3-to-1 option.
And where is that site in the process right now?
The county has just I just spoke with Rob Paul this morning. The county has retained a consultant and is beginning to lay out their work plan with the consultant, and they've invited the state to be involved in that. And that's part of our memorandum of understanding with the county. They've taken some time to retain the consultant. I think they're probably wishing they were able to move more quickly, but I'm not sure the reasons why they've been involved in that process for so long.
What exactly is the plan? What are they? What I guess what I'm trying to say is, what are they planning? Is it the plan to deal with the wetlands on the site?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, the two projects, the Lebanon project and the Douglas County projects, are similar in that the Economic Development Department has provided some funding to the City of Lebanon and Douglas County. And basically to do this is that to complete wetland delineations on the site, to complete functional assessments on the principal site, to conduct an alternatives analysis and a master development plan, and then develop the mitigation plan either on the site or off-site or through purchasing of credits from a bank. And all that is done as a pre-application exercise so that we can kind of get a preloaded permit application developed in advance of either an actual project or being ready to fill out the application and submit that proposal for approval. So we basically end up with a shovel-ready project site with the mitigation laid out, with all of the bells and whistles that are necessary to meet it through make it go through both the Corps and the state process.
So at this point in the process, the county is still scoping a plan on doing the plan, they're planning on how to do the plan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, the county has a development plan in mind for both of those sites, and they're working to, I suppose, to get it on paper, if you will. Although I think they already have a conceptual plan, and now it's doing the work necessary to preload the permit application process. When we last met several months ago, the county and the Umpqua Economic Development Partnership was struggling with just how to approach this issue on that particular site in Sutherland. And when we met, we were able to, and in subsequent meetings, we were able to come up with a game plan that moved some money into the county's hands and helped them kind of move off dead center in terms of putting together a plan to develop that site.
So the goal then would be to actually come up with a development plan for the site that delineates the wetlands and then come up with a mitigation plan for the wetlands?
That's correct. That is approvable by both the state and the federal government and provides predictability and certainty for the future developer and or the county if they choose to develop it themselves.
And the timeline for that actually to come into fruition so that you're at the place where you actually have mitigated the wetlands is indeterminate.
Once we originally set out a game plan to have this project completed by July, for whatever reason, the county was not able to get a consultant underway, and so we're 4 months behind. Once we get that application process complete, we'll be able to review and approve within the 90-day required time period under the law. And as far as we're concerned, then dirt can start flying right after that point if the county so chooses to move forward.
I'd like to expand a little beyond what Representative Morgan. And I do appreciate, I know you folks have done a lot of work in trying to figure out how can we repackage this stuff. I'm still concerned about the timelines of the process. And the goal I think everyone is pushing towards is to have pre-approved sites. But that is requiring considerable amount of capital, considerable amount of time. And if there's not a ready buyer or someone ready to move on the property, the landowner could be sitting on a considerable investment. You know, it's a tremendous risk. On the other hand, we're seeing venture capital that looks at this state. We've had testimony at the Full Ways and Means Committee. The people will come in, look over the state, look at the communities, like what they see, but when they hear of the process, they can go someplace else and not have the risk or the timelines involved. And so, some way or another, I think we've got to figure out a way to compete, quite frankly. And that doesn't mean that we lower our standards or any of those kind of things, but how we get through this process, I think we've got more work to do. I do still want to say that I do appreciate that we're talking and we're thinking about this, but we're just not there yet.
I just thought of another thing. With reference to the Lebanon sites and the Sutherland sites, and I guess anything where you would be doing a mitigation arrangement up front of actually developing the site, what happens if for instance, in Sutherland, if they did get a mitigation plan that was agreed to by the division and then the rules changed. You changed your rules for some reason, or the feds changed their rules, which required you to change your rules. What does that do to that site at that point?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, the key is if what we're shooting for is for the community to go ahead and go through the permit process for that site. Once the permit is issued, we can issue a multi-year permit. It can be renewed. If the work is done and it sits on a shelf awaiting a developer, then the developer is going to be, the permit is going to be judged based upon the regulations in place at the time when the application is made.
So
it's prudent to complete this work and move it through the permit process post haste.
And so then if you, so what you're saying is there would, there could be a point at which you have a permitted site that has no development on it?
Chair, Representative Morgan, absolutely.
Okay. So then at that, at the point that you had a permitted site that had no development, and then you had a developer that came in to develop the site, it wouldn't make any difference at that point whether the regulations around wetland issues had changed or not?
If, Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, if the state has issued a permit on the assumption, on the representations of what is in the permit application, i.e., that a development plan is going to be laid out according to the application, and we've approved the permit, then that's the permit. If the rules change later, then the permit is still in place.
Okay, so the only thing that could put that in jeopardy then would be if the whatever was permitted for the site didn't fit what the developer wanted to do, and it had to be opened up again.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, there are provisions for that, even on the, even in a circumstance when a permit is given and the applicant comes back and says, gee, I need to change this a bit. We can modify permit conditions. We can do that at renewal, at the permit renewal period, or we can do it you know, prior, during the time that the permit is good, during construction. That's not unusual. And let me say that all this is predicated on us bringing the federal partners along similarly and getting their buy-in at the same time. That's very important in this process. We think it's we're kind of leading on the leading edge of this, and we're dragging the core 404 permitting process along with us by trying to force them into acceptance of this type of approach. These are not speculative developments that are being talked about. These are folks that have every true intention of developing this property for the use that it's zoned, and we're trying to facilitate that and meet the requirements of the state removal fill law and broker to some degree acceptance of, for the 404 permit at the same time.
Well, and I appreciate that. May I have one more follow-up,
sure.
Mr. Chair? But what I'm trying to get my arms around here is I know that on the Sutherland site, they don't have people in mind to build on the sites, that they're at, they're trying to get the sites ready from a speculative point of view. And so the question I have is, if you have, they have gotten a specific site through your permitting process and had it permitted for some configuration of the, using the land on the site, and then mitigating what would be the wetlands, and I'm assuming that there'll be a place on there that will be developable, and there'll be some places that won't be developable. So what happens then if you get someone who wants to develop the site come in and they need to somehow change the permit and the regulations have changed in the meantime? Is the division in a position where they have to apply the new level of regulation to the permit at that point before they can adjust it?
The answer I'm going to give you is not black and white, because it's going to depend. It's going to depend, is this 2 years from now or 10 years from now? How long has that permit been in place? What is the nature of the change? How radical is the change from the existing from the current permit to what the new developer wants to do? On a scale of gray, the more certainty there is if the developer comes in and makes minor changes to the footprint of the building or the road, or you know, to the build out line.
Soon to the time that the original permit was issued, I assume.
Well, yeah, or yeah, because there's the more radical the change, the more scrutiny likely will come of it, because one of the litmus tests we place in terms of a waiver is the significance of the change. If it's highly significant, then we may subject it to another public review process, because it may look and smell like a different project. If, however, it's a minor change, not significant, then it doesn't trigger all the new public review process. you know, it's hard for me to look into the crystal ball and say what the rules might be 2 years from now, let alone 10. I know the direction we're trying to move in is one that creates greater certainty and predictability in the process. That's our goal. At the same time, not lowering the interest in environmental protection for the very purposes that the law was set out. That is a balancing. We need some flexibility to offer to the permit applicant so that we're not forcing them into a box. At the same time, we need enough predictability and certainty so that folks just aren't filling out an application and bringing it to us and saying, well, we hope you'll approve this. We don't know what standard you're going to use, but we hope you approve it. That we're going away from that game plan.
But I think my point is, and what I wanted to get on the public record, was that there is an inherent degree of uncertainty, even to the certainty that you're trying to build into the process. And the uncertainty is if the final development, if the people that want to finally develop the property have a different need than what the original permit was for, then they're essentially in an uncertain situation again. And given the parameters that you outlined, and I know that with reference to the Sutherland site, that one of the problems that they've been facing is that over the years that they've been trying to open the site to development, the regulations have shifted under them a number of times, and it's been real problematic.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, that's absolutely right, and that was one of the things that came up in our discussion when I was down there, and that's why I was so strongly urging the community to grab the brass ring now and move ahead with dispatch on based upon the set of rules that are in place today, and try to get to yes under today's conditions. I bought a home in North Salem on a dead end street. The certainty I thought I had was that I would always be on a dead end street. 10 years later, the street went through. The thing to do is, in terms of the Sutherland side, is for the community to do what it's doing, is to move forward to try to stake out its certainty as well as it can in the near future.
Yeah, and the risk for them is that if the sites are not developable along the parameters of the permit, then they're back in the uncertainty game again.
Well, you know, there's a lot of different issues involved in these sites, and land use is one of them. And you would think that if a property was zoned land use for industrial, that would hold, although we've got an issue in the state right now of putting size restrictions on buildings, even though they were previously industrial sites, or it could be the same situation on the permitted new sites. The federal issues are huge, you know, and the problem is we don't have any control over whether there's new listings. My guess is that even though you issue a permit, if there is a new endangered species listing, that could put you into a whole new ball game. Even though it is a valid permit, an active permit. Is that not true?
Mr. Chair, if a permit is issued there's a new species listed, the landowner always has the responsibility of conducting their activities to comply with state and federal law. We're going to stand behind our permit as long as the permit is valid. The Corps of Engineers, being a federal agency and there being a direct federal nexus to the Endangered Species Act, if that same permit might come up for renewal, they then would have to maybe reinitiate consultation with the appropriate federal agency to determine whether or not they're adversely affecting the species by the action.
Are you?
Well, I would submit, Mr. Chair, too, that renewal isn't the only scenario, that more often than renewal is some kind of an expansion or an installation of different equipment or, you know, some kind of change on the site that requires a land use okay that kicks you into a pathway that gets you involved with a bunch of different agencies.
Just briefly, I want to bring up, are you familiar, department, with the lawsuit that's going on with the Department of Forestry right now? over the Endangered Species Act and 40 rule.
Is that the Pacific Rivers Council?
Yes.
Yes.
And if we lose that lawsuit, what that could mean to your department when you issue permits?
Could have implications for us, too.
You have any thoughts on that? And is it, I would think it'd be a very large concern.
Right now we're in litigation, so I think it's probably best that I not comment on it.
Sure. Thank you. Better proceed or we're not going to make it through our list today.
Let me move through the next one. The first item on here is supporting the ODOT Bridge Road improvements. I saw that their package did go through the House the other day. So this program option package 107 is really dependent on that package going through. And this would be to provide expedited permit service and review their applications on a very timely basis so that they can proceed with their projects. The second item here is promoting mitigation banks. We've been working with House Bill 2899 stakeholders group, and we're looking at other ways, too, that we can help that out. Another area that we intend to look at is the feasibility of investing Common School Fund money in industrial sites. Now, I would premise that to say it would have to be a prudent and good business deal for the Common School Fund, but there may be some possibilities for industrial sites there.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Murray.
I would caution the department if they walk down this road to make sure that there are no wetlands on the industrial sites.
I thought you were going to say that. One thing also that we are looking at is that we still have in lieu lands that are owed to us by the federal government, and possibilities that there may be some sites that they could provide us that might have potential economic development opportunities.
Mr. Chair, I just had a thought.
Mark.
With reference to investing the Common School Fund in industrial sites, do you see any kind of an issue that could arise there? Because the department is regulating the development on industrial sites and owning them themselves, so there could be a conflict of interest there.
Senator Miserly, Representative Morgan, that's a possibility, although we would try to do everything we can to make sure that it goes through the same rigor as any other permit. In fact, we had that kind of situation arise when we had Tongue Point, where we had permits there that we had to seek. And we did try to have, say, a person that was different than the one that was actually doing the land management be the one that was looking at it from the permit process as a way to keep some arm's length and make sure that it was complying with state law.
How do you resolve conflicts in that situation?
I guess that's what I'm here for.
It is, I think, something that requires a lot of thought, because in a situation where you essentially are regulating an activity that you're doing yourself, there isn't an arm's length relationship there, and there isn't any objectivity.
And I understand you on that. We have another situation that we're dealing with gravel, which I'll talk about in a little bit, where we regulate removal and fill with regard to gravel and waterways. But we also, if they're in a navigable, in a tidally owned river, from a navigability standpoint, we get royalties for that Common School Fund.
Okay.
Let's see. I also want to point out there is Senate Bill 467 that's under consideration, that we've been participating in a work group on that would identify industrial sites, and there would be one FTE targeted for that.
And that's the same in sites that John talked about earlier? Okay. Is there discussion in that bill of expanding that to old sites as well as new sites?
Again, for the record, John Lilly, Mr. Chair, I think there's no boundaries on these sites. it's whatever, as the bill is being drafted, the certified sites are based upon what local governments and property owners bring forward, and then they would be run through this screening process to determine if they meet the certification requirements.
Mr. Chair, I might point out this section also has a proposed budget note in it if the subcommittee wanted to look at that on page 2. And the one recommendation that I would make to that budget note is that there be a little more descriptive phrase added as to what exactly the economic stimulus strategy is, such as expediting the certification of shovel-ready status of industrial lands or something to that effect.
It's on page 2. It's under the one called Economic Stimulus. It's the third work plan in. That helps.
After the first yellow page. The yellow pages between the segments.
Okay.
Go to the first yellow page and then go to the... Well, actually go to the second yellow page and it's... The back of that piece.
Next yellow page.
Page 2.
There you go.
I think you've got it.
Oh, right here?
Yeah.
You have it, Wayne?
Remember I said earlier we should have everything numbered in consecutive order? No presentations? No, where are you?
In the second yellow page. And it's on the... Here's the second yellow page. It's on the back of that.
But don't count the cover.
Right.
Actually, it's...
Find the one that says economic stimulus on it. It's on the second page.
It's the third yellow page.
Oh, mine's behind the...
Wait a minute, there's not it either.
The books aren't all the same. It's just close.
There you go. I think you got more yellow pages.
Yeah, I got more yellow pages.
I'm glad you're a full-service committee chair.
I'm not doing very well either. Okay. Good listening.
Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, it talks about the division reporting to the Emergency Board or Appropriate Committee on the progress and effectiveness of the program efforts to implement the economic stimulus strategy, and I would just recommend that the economic stimulus strategy be a little bit more described in the budget note, since the budget note would be a standalone note and not after all the information in this section. So you
is
could
there also related here... I would like to have progress and effectiveness more defined, too, so that we can make some kind of judge about whether we're successfully achieving the goals or not. And again, I would repeat my comment about tying this to some kind of financial piece.
Yep. We're on to water leasing. What a waste.
We can also work on trying to provide, work with Sue on some wording on that that might be helpful. On the waterway leasing, we are planning to continue the process from 2001-03 and working towards securing leases, license, registration, and easements, also providing services to those with leases and licenses, registrations, easements. We did hold a community workshop, for example, in Astoria last week, where we did that in conjunction with the county and with DEQ, so that people were able to come and there was one place for them to get all that they needed to do for their floating structures. And this does involve approval of Policy Package 101. That's one FTE. I should also add that also included in Policy Package 101 is another FTE for the rangeland position, although we don't have a paper dealing with the rangeland position here.
Are these new positions or?
These are limited duration positions that already exist in this biennium that we're asking to be continued on in the next.
Is that true of all the previous positions you were talking about?
Not necessarily. The ODOT position, we have one position that was approved by the emergency board. The package would add another position to that. 467 is a new position as well.
Mr. Chair, can I ask another little question here? Well, I remember back when we had the public hearings on the governor's balanced budget proposal, one of the issues that we got into in quite a bit of detail was the cost of administering the programs that were revenue streams into the Common School Trust Fund. And I'm wondering, as we work our way through these different pieces of that puzzle, what the agency's doing to bring the cost down and raise the revenue.
We're doing a number of things overall in terms of increasing of looking at revenue generation. We're looking at what we can do with waterway leases. We're looking at other business opportunities that we might be able to do on our lands. If we are able to secure the Eastern Oregon property manager position, I think that will allow us to be able to sell or exchange isolated parcels, which will bring more money into the Common School Fund, as well as explore opportunities such as wind generation, communication sites. We will be looking at the Elliott State Forest very closely, both in terms of costs as well as what the plan that's being developed now will mean in terms of the harvest and what it will generate for the Common School Fund. There are a number of funds we're looking on.
Would it be possible? I mean, one of the things I would think in terms of gauging whether the programs were, whether you were moving successfully into economic development and maximizing the cash flow to the Common School Trust Fund, if it's possible as a part of these check-ins that we're talking about in different budget notes, to introduce a piece that'll show whether there is an improvement or an eroding of the funding that's going into the Common School Trust Fund, or indeed whether it's even possible to do that on the time frames that we're talking about having you report back in.
We do track revenues and how they come in. And look at revenues that are generated by under certain programs. What is difficult from the revenue generation is that sometimes some of it's opportunistic about when we can take advantage of opportunities, and hence the revenue flow is not always even throughout the biennium.
Uh-huh.
So it's difficult to be able to say and track really closely where we are. And then also some of it depends on when particular leases are becoming due. So it's not an easy one to be able to tag and say after the first quarter we expect exactly to have this.
Yeah, I could see, because you would have renewals that would take place at specific times, and so the cash flow would be going up and down.
Yes. I mean, we try to look at overall levels of activities that we're involved in, as well as, you know, where are we with that cash, with the cash flow coming in. But that's one of our highest priorities, and that's the reason why we were originally formed as an agency.
Okay, we've got about 30 minutes left.
Okay, I'll try to pick up the pace a little bit. Filled lands, this is coming out of recommendations from the House Bill 836 work group. It was one that was convened at the request of Senator Ferrioli. It was legislation that you put forward. The recommendations that work group were that in 4 years to complete a statewide inventory, review and update of fills with ownership questions, to look at an interim task force to continue the work group efforts, and to resolve any settlements on a voluntary case-by-case basis under existing laws and rules. We would also consult with the Attorney General at the recommendation of that 836 work group to look more closely at the legal issues connected with public trust doctrine and the filled lands. In order to carry this out, it would require three FTEs, that's a natural resource specialist, three, a GIS specialist, and an office specialist. And then we included a budget for the Attorney General consultation.
I suspect we're going to have a few problems with the co-chairs on this issue.
There is also a proposed budget note that came from the work group, and that is under the work plan that says filled lands work plan on page 3. And then connected with that, I attached Senator Ferrioli's charge to the group and then the report that Martha Pagel prepared.
And there is more work ongoing, so my guess is that before this committee passes this budget out, we'll probably have some updates. We'll probably have some updates on the budget and some things because the work group is still ongoing.
I don't think there... Steve, is there another meeting that's planned? Could I ask Steve Purchase to come up? Because Steve participated on that work group. And he's also smaller than me for the first time.
I'm
a member of the committee for the record. Steve Purchase, Assistant Director for Field Operations. And I also do the short chair. But I'm going to sit up straight because that way you'll think I'm taller than I really am. Senator, to be absolutely honest, we believe the work group has completed its work. The report that Ann alluded to in this work document is the committee's report back to Senator Ferrioli on what we had accomplished and where we thought we were on this issue, and there has not been another meeting scheduled since that time.
Okay. So this report we're looking at here is in letter form to Senator Ferrioli?
Note from Martha Pagel is to the SB 836 work group.
Okay.
I understand that David Bantoff is supposed to be taking what Martha has put together and preparing a report. I haven't seen the final report yet, or the draft report.
I guess that's what I was getting to, that this isn't really the formal response because it should be coming from the chair of the task force.
That's what I understand. But I did include Martha's memo on here because that did summarize where the work group was at and what they had recommended.
Right.
And it also included the proposed budget note.
Okay.
The next issue paper on here is the sand and gravel leasing. This is aimed at trying to find a balance to maintain gravel operations and royalties on state-owned waterways while still protecting fish recreation, navigation, and commerce. We have held meetings with the federal agencies. That includes NOAA Fisheries and U.S. Fish and Wildlife and the Army Corps of Engineers. Also included in that were other state agencies such as DOGAMI and ODFW and ourselves. I had reported to Senator Messerly at one of our individual meetings that we're trying to get agreement about a process to move forward on this that might include, for example, temporary permits while we have an advisory committee that works out a plan or proposal for what can be done for operations and what kind of timetable there would be. And right now I'm waiting to hear back from participants at that meeting and whether or not they buy off on having that advisory task force formed. I've talked with Jim Brown about it. He's in favor of doing this task force. If we can do that, then we can explore the options and look at which ones might be available to the industry and hopefully be able to come up with some recommendations that will provide more certainty and provide assurance of how they can operate and what they can do and where.
Representative Krieger.
For royalties, state land, waterways, do you know if that brings the state in a year?
Biennial basis, it's about $900,000 to $1 million. So it's not insignificant.
And on the last page of this section, we talk about bringing the task or forming a new group to review the IMST. Is this the same MIST report that you're talking about on the first page? Because I don't know where I heard this, but it seems to back my mind that the IMST is taking a look at this again right now. Is that true?
I haven't heard that they're doing it again, but they did issue a report last July.
Right.
And so my hope would be that task force would look at the IMST report as well.
Okay.
And let's see. The next work plan has to do with the Elliott State Forest work plan. What we are aiming to achieve with the Elliott State Forest, because this is one of our highest valued lands among the Common School Fund lands, is to manage for sustainable even flow timber harvest. We want to avoid disposal of land except isolated tracts, and we want to keep management costs within the range of costs for comparable lands. We'll be assisting in the management plan and habitat conservation plan. What we want to do is try to return to the sales quantity that we've had at higher levels. So we've dropped down from about 28 million board feet level down to about the 20-21 million board foot level. I hope we can get back up to that higher level with the habitat conservation plan. The problem that we have, the state that we're in right now on the Elliott, is that we have a habitat conservation plan that, when it was first negotiated, included two species only, the spotted owl and the marbled murrelets. The spotted owl was for a much longer period of time. I think it may have been a 50-year horizon. I'm not sure on that. But the marbled murrelet was only for a very short period of time, like 6 or 7 years. That's now expired for the marbled murrelet. The problem we're having is that we don't have the incidental take coverage anymore on the marbled murrelet, so we end up having our sales really affected because of marbled murrelet on the Elliott. The Elliott has older timber than much of the forest surrounding it, so it tends to get more marbled murrelets in there, as well as spotted owls. So we need to have that in order to be able to continue operations through the future.
That's a discussion that I think is prudent moves forward, simply because I believe there's only one HCP in the state of Oregon, and that is on Weyerhaeuser property, very close to the Elliott, if not bordering the Elliott. And the testimony we've heard here at this committee is that there's absolutely opposite ends, points of view as to the value of the HCPs. I notice on your budget note, proposed budget note, reporting back as to the management plan, the habitat conservation plan, as I've discussed with you, I think there's a need to start the discussion of whether it's a prudent investment to even own the Elliott State Forest. And I would hope that we can maybe have some discussion, or at least the State Land Board and the Department of Forestry, and since the State Land Board owns the property, they're probably the proper ones to start to initiate that discussion. But if the trend we're on now, a prudent investor would probably start thinking of ways to divest the investment, quite frankly.
You know, I think we're going to have to look at, I think we're going to have to look at whether or not the habitat conservation plan is going to be a good business investment for the state. Right now, I know what's happening where we don't have coverage for the marbled murrelets. However, what I have to be able to see is what we finally can negotiate with the federal agencies, because that will also determine whether or not we want to proceed forward with that habitat conservation plan, whether or not we need to have it just for marbled murrelets or we need to expand it for other species that are there as well. In terms of looking at the Elliott State Forest, we need to look at whether or not that's providing a good return, but also we need to look at it in terms of, you know, what could be cut on it as well, because even if you had a private landowner coming in, they'd still be bound by the Federal Endangered Species Act restrictions that we have.
Representative Krieger, or excuse me, Representative Morgan. That was close.
We have had a lot of discussion on this when we had a public hearing on the Department of Forestry's budget bill. And from the discussion that, what I recall is, there is, again, a great deal of uncertainty around what you're buying with the revised HCP in terms of the certainty, again, if there is a new thing that's declared threatened or endangered under the ESA, then that, again, has an impact on the certainty of harvest under the HCP. And if there are delistings of things under our revised HCP, then in order to accommodate any changes in management plans around that, you have to reopen and renegotiate the HCP. So there are real issues there. And I do think that this is an ideal point in time for an analysis to be done on the Elliott around some kind of a scenario of selling the land and then having the principal that is generated by the sale of the land put into some kind of trust fund that generates income. And if nothing else, it would be very interesting under that scenario to see the impact of taking the land costs that the Department of Forestry has and that DSL has off of the management stream to see what that does to the revenue stream. And I do honestly think that we are at a point in time where it is very prudent to take a look at whether dispersing the state's our ownership of the land is going to benefit the school trust fund in the long run more than trying to manage it under an HCP, given the uncertainties that are inherent in it.
Senator Mesley, Representative Morgan, you make some good points, first in terms of the Habitat Conservation Plan, because I think it is important to know what the final negotiated product would be before there would be sign-off. There, we would have to look at what would be the impact of any new species or delistings on that. Those are very good points. In terms of looking at the sale of the Elliott, if we would look at that, I think we'd have to look at it from the standpoint of the whole Common School Fund portfolio and how it balances out the investments and what could be the return that we get off of harvesting versus what we'd get if we just invested that money. You know, right now, it's nice to have some real estate given how the market's been doing in the last several years to balance out the return.
And I think that the other piece that needs to be factored into this is the increase in cost of managing the land. That we're now in a place where when you take the Department of Forestry and the DSL expenses out of the revenue stream, you have very little money going into the Common School Trust Fund.
We necessarily still have about $20 million or more.
But it's comparative to what it has been in the past.
And I would agree, compared to
it still is the most significant revenue stream going into the Common School Trust Fund from my recollection, but that the costs of managing it are going up and the revenue that it's generating are going down.
Senator Messer
is going down. Excuse me.
Senator Messer, Representative Morgan, and we do, you know, understand that. That's one reason why we're going to be working closely with the Department of Forestry to track those costs. It was also another reason why we had contracted with John Buter to get his perspective on that as well.
I would be very interested, Mr. Chair, in seeing somewhere in either in the Department of Forestry's budget or in this budget an analysis done on the value of the land being sold and the revenue that could be generated by investing that in some kind of a trust-type fund.
Senator Minnesota, Representative, I do want to point out that that is original constitutional land, and thus any sale proceeds would go into the common school fund, where it would be invested, and then the investment earnings off of that then go to schools.
So the analysis should be relatively simple then, in just finding the market value of the land and then extrapolating out the return on the common school trust fund.
Senator Resnick, Representative Borgen, I don't want to say how simple it would be. I first would have to talk to the Department of Forestry about what it would take. Because I think that given values that have been placed on the Elliott in years past, those may not be valid anymore given the endangered species, because I think that would then require a revaluation of the property.
Well, certainly there is a robust market in land going on all around the Elliott all the time. There's land changing hands there, so there should be a basis.
I think Representative Krager's patience is
bailing out
for the day.
Okay, what time is it? Okay. Let me, do you want me to try to go through the remaining parts of it here? The last work plan here is with South Slough Reserve. We would be doing a number of things on South Slough. We're pursuing an agreement and funding for co-locating the administrative offices with the Charleston Merchants Association. I understand that the Charleston Merchants Association will be signing an MOA that we have worked with them on July 17th. So then we will be moving forward with exploring the feasibility of co-locating that office. We plan on trying to increase visitation and outreach for schools. There, we also conduct research on issues such as stream restoration, oyster cultivation, ground fishing, salmon, invasive species, and threatened and endangered species. We are working with regional economic development entities and local officials and provide them with technical information and support as requested. We do plan to explore options for other funding, which could include user fees and trying to see if we can increase the amount of federal and other fund grant funds that we bring in. We are working on completing the management plan, and then we would plan on continuing the fiscal reporting to the legislature through the Legislative Fiscal Office and DAF, similar to what we have been doing in the current biennium. And then we, let's see. Now, in carrying this out, it would include Policy Package 103, which are two limited duration positions. These are already existing positions that are funded through federal funds. Package 112 is a position realignment, a reclassification that involves grant funds as well as a little bit of common school fund. And then lastly, there was a supplemental request that we brought to the attention of you at our last time that were four positions that are funded solely by grants, federal grants and other grants, that they are existing positions right now that we'd like to have them carry forward with as well.
And have you had discussions with the Marine Biology School as to sharing the cost of the sanctuary? I know they do a lot of research in the sanctuary.
No, I have not, Senator.
I think that our public hearings earlier, there has been discussion about the cost of this coming out of the Common School Fund, and is this appropriate? And are there other ways that we could be partially funding the reserve at present time for Morgan's, totally coming out of common school?
We could try to explore those possibilities. With the federal grant, it does require a matching grant with it. So someone would have to come up with that matching grant. And I understand that two sessions ago, the legislature, Ways and Means, decided to have South Slough become part of the assets of the common school fund.
Well, but times have changed. Financial picture has changed. And that's not, I'm not speaking anything about the reserve itself, but just how does the state of Oregon fund it?
Well, I'd be willing to talk with the university and see if they're willing to share and then let you know.
But I think long term it should be our goal to reduce the burden on the common school fund as much as possible.
That's all I have in terms of my presentation.
Mr. Chair, I was just curious if the subcommittee had any thing else that they wanted to add to the budget note on the Elliott State Forest. Right now, what it says is that DSL and the Department of Forestry will report periodically to the Land Board and the Legislature on development of the Forest Management Plan and the HCP and efforts to implement the strategy that's described in this section. Was there anything else that you wanted to have added to that as a result of your discussion?
We discussed the whether it's feasible to own the property.
Cost-benefit kind of analysis.
And again, I think we need some kind of time frames in there.
And then if I might suggest one other budget note to the subcommittee, and that is with the new positions, having a budget note similar to what the agency had from last session, which was to come back with information on the performance related to those positions, including generating revenue for the Common School Fund.
And we'd be happy to do that.
That's all you have. Thank you very much.
No.
And we made it a little bit early.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
And Mr. Chair, just for your information, there were some faxes sent to our office. This is testimony from two members of the Oregon PTA, the president, and Pete Lance, chair, I believe. Some information.
Yep. Okay, I'll enter that into the record. Thank you. With that, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 5527 and adjourn the committee.